This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. St. Mary Aldermanbury sits behind the Guild Hall, in between Gresham Street to its south and London Wall to its north. Here, I talked to Marion Blair from the Friends of the City Gardens about the church and what's left of it. So we've now entered the garden that was on the site of St. Mary Aldermanbury. Can you tell us what's left?
Right. Well, actually, the interesting thing about this church is that, in fact, this church does still exist. It's just simply, it's not here. But if we move over here, you can take a look at a plaque to it. So we've got sort of very much the same kind of story, in that there was a church here going right back into the sort of 12th century, St. Mary Aldermanbury, and Great Fire caused significant damage, Christopher Wren, Blitz, again significant damage, and the entire church after the Blitz was bombed out completely. It was then taken up to Missouri in the state, into Fulton, and here is a picture of it, in fact, actually.
It looks as good as new.
Looking as a Wren church.
It really does.
So it was completely rebuilt.
After the Blitz, the exterior walls that survived were taken down stone by stone, and they were labelled, all 7,000 of them, shipped over to Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri, America, and re-erected there. In 1961, the college wanted to erect a memorial to Winston Churchill, and rebuilding this church in America seemed to be a good way to remember him. The stones were removed in 1965, the same year Churchill died. Someone referred to this huge operation as the last word in sentimental extravagance. However, the cost of moving the stones was not extravagant, because the ship carrying them used the stones as ballast, and therefore didn't charge for the transport. In 1966, 300 years after the Fire of London, the foundation stone of this church was relaid in Westminster College, Fulton, Missouri. The reason they wanted to create a memorial to Churchill in this college was because it was here, on the 5th of March 1946, that he delivered his speech, warning of the Iron Curtain that was falling across Europe. If you go and visit the rebuilt St. Mary Aldermanbury, and you're familiar with Wren churches, you will feel at home. It's a simple rectangular church with stone walls, large plain glass windows on four sides, with a small lead steeple with a clock on it on top of the centrally positioned stone tower. It reminds me a lot of St. Lawrence Jewry, but just a lot cleaner. Although the church has been removed and is appreciated and used on another continent, the garden that has taken its place may pleasantly surprise you.
And so now it does still exist. It just simply doesn't exist here. But you've still got, you know, elements of it with the pillars. You've got these yews here that just indicate the sides of the walls in between the pillars themselves. What it does have, though, is these two very significant trees. So this is a Magnolia grandiflora, which has these fantastic big saucer-like white, beautiful creamy white flowers. It's a beautiful smelling. And this is a swamp cypress, and the city have got two swamp cypress trees, and the other one is over in the garden on Huggin Hill.
Oh, the Cleary Gardens?
Yeah, Cleary Gardens. Yeah. It's in Cleary Gardens, but that's a much, much smaller one. This is a huge one, and is a sort of a great example of a swamp cypress. Interestingly, the building that we're looking at is the back of the City of London Police Station, and on certain days, if you stand here, you can just get a sort of whiff of something slightly odd.
Yes, now we've passed that nice sweet-smelling plant. Exactly. I can smell manure or something.
Exactly. And so that manure tells you that we're very near some stables, and the City of London Police are still mounted, so we are at the back of where their stables are, which is why I always maintain these two trees grow so incredibly well.
It's about 5 stories high.
It is,
isn't it?
It's a very, very big.
And I have seen a magnolia before, and I don't think I've seen one that big before.
And the interesting thing about this magnolia is the majority of magnolias are deciduous, so they lose their leaves. This one is an evergreen magnolia.
Yeah.
Interesting about this garden is it's in sort of, I always look at it in kind of on two levels. So you've got this part, which the story is always about the church and about Fulton and about it being rebuilt.
Yeah.
And then you've got this other top section where you can just see the bust over here of Shakespeare.
Let's go and have a look.
This is what's called a parterre. So the Elizabethans used this very much as a sort of gardening conceit. And can you see how it weaves in and out? So it creates these kind of patterns. And so when it's really cut, it hasn't been hard cut at the moment, but you can really notice then the way it looks like this section is running under this section.
It's almost like a Celtic knot.
Yes, like a Celtic knot. Because of the fact that during Elizabethan times, the way you looked at a garden was you looked at them from above. So it was a garden not to wander in, but a garden to wonder at. So you stood, looked down onto it. So sometimes what there would be is not necessarily plants. There would be things like coloured sand, again, and the really complex ones would be like coats of arms.
So this is a sort of a semi-Elizabethan knot garden.
Yes.
It's not a knot.
And it's really a bit of a sort of a kind of bow to Shakespeare.
Right. So we've come up into this upper garden layer that you were talking about. And yeah, there is the bust of Shakespeare. Do you want to tell me about that?
Yeah. So this particular bust is dedicated to Shakespeare because there were two gentlemen who were church wardens in this particular parish and of the Church of St Mary Aldermanbury, who were involved with Shakespeare in the King's Players. And they were responsible after his death for putting together the folio of his plays. So this is why they're commemorated. So you can see here it's John Heminge and Henry Condell.
So really without them
we wouldn't be studying Shakespeare at GCSE.
Or at all.
So
it's really entirely thanks to them that the plays have survived. And so although it's a statue of how we think Shakespeare looks, it's not to him. It's to them.
No, it's to them. Yeah.
Because they were church wardens here.
They were, yes.
But we don't know what they look like, so they don't get their own busts. It's quite a significant statue, actually. It does stand out quite prominently.
Mm, it is, and you've got this reference here to the first folio.
Yeah.
And this idea, do you see the roll? There was always this... the way in which plays were actually written was that they were... Each player had his own role, hence why we talk about a role, that they were given. So it wasn't like a book. You actually had your own part.
Yes.
And then were given your role when it was, you know, that you then had to learn in order to go and perform. And what they did was put all of these things together.
They collated it
all. Yeah.
All the roles were put in a folio.
Yeah.
Hemings and Condell were well known and loved by Shakespeare. Both were mentioned in his will. Both were left money with instructions to buy rings in his memory. And both were buried here, Condell in 1627 and Hemings in 1630. In that same century, John Milton, the English poet who penned Paradise Lost, married his third and last wife, Elizabeth Minshull, here in 1663. And then at the end of the 17th century, the notorious hanging judge, Judge Jeffreys, was buried here. He was responsible for imposing many a death sentence on people opposed to the king, King James II, during the Bloody Assizes in 1685. Originally, he was buried in the Tower of London, where he'd been held a prisoner by William III, to the delight of his enemies, and to those whose family members had been executed under his instructions. But a few years after his death in 1694, his corpse was transferred here to St Mary Aldermanbury, his parish church. In the Blitz, his tomb was smashed to pieces and obliterated. All around this site are evergreens, common in churchyards, some say to remind the living of the year-round memories they have of the dead.
And in terms of the upper garden, is there anything to note here?
This has got a lot of evergreens that are just going to... They're going to be here. They're not going to change. They're just going to... You know, they're a little bit heavy. Yeah.
Filling a space.
They fill the space. They fill the space completely. So there's a few perennials. This little one here. Then it's got this massive sort of... This sarcococca, which is this wonderful fragrant... slightly rambling. You can clip this back so it's a little bit more contained, but it does just have this lovely smell. Its planting, I think, probably could do with a little bit more work on it. You know, this is a busy area. We're right next door to the Guildhall. It's a good place to come. You can sit on the grass. You know, it's always, again, about needing to have green spaces simply for these, you know, 400,000 city workers who come in every day. You know, where are they going to go?
The space that was once St Mary Aldermanbury may not look as well pruned or landscaped as other city gardens, but its functionality allows it to be enjoyed by the working population of the city and also another important group of city dwellers.
This is a garden with a good bird population,
okay.
Actually, because it's got some quite dense undergrowth planting. This is a very good place for sort of ground cover for birds.
Right.
So, you know, it is important in that respect. You know, if what we're trying to do is improve and build upon the bird population, we do need to provide the right kind of habitats for them. And I was just reminded, just looking up at the nest boxes here,
yes.
You know, not every garden has a nest box, whereas this garden does.
And I suppose if they were to take all of these evergreen shrubs out, that would spell the end of life.
Yeah,
birds,
I mean, a lot of insects
birds.
Need to be, and a lot of birds, sort of forage at low level. You know, what all these green spaces do is create these green corridors, and that's important because otherwise you're never going to be able to encourage any kind of wildlife if you don't provide the right sort of habitats. The other way of treating it is to hard landscape it much more, which, of course, from a maintenance point of view, is much easier. But, you know, there is a huge downside to that, just having paving and seats.
That downside is the loss of habitat for birds and insects and the loss of green space for office-dwelling workers to get some respite from a dull or difficult day of dealing and trading.